We are holding on Ein Zion Amud Beis, about the middle of the wide lines by the two dots. We said in the Mishnah that unlike the Amonim and Mayavim, where we said Amoni v'lay Amonis, Mayavim v'lay Mayavis, that a woman from Amon or Moyav who becomes a Geyoris is allowed right away to intermarry into the Jewish people. The Mitzrim and the Adurmim, we said on the other hand, so there's a Kula in them that's only till three generations they're also, but there's a Chumra that it applies to both men and women. So now we said Reb Shimon disagreed with that and said that the women are also mutter right away of Mitzrayim and Eder. And Reb Shimon brought a Kavachomer that after all, if we're going to be Machmer, we're so Machmer on Moyav and Ammon as far as the men, but we're Makel on the women, how much more so here? We're Makel on the Mitzrayim and the Edomim, that even the men can join after three generations, how much more so the women? So the Chacham answered him, Im halacha nekabel, if you're saying that you learned this as a halacha from your Rebbe, then fine, we can accept that what you say, we can accept what you're saying. The Im ledin, but if you're going to argue on the basis of kavachomer, then they say yesh tshuva, then there's a way to shlug it up. And he says, no, I'm saying it as a halacha. So what's the underlying discussion that the Mishnah left out the details of the discussion, but what would be the answer? What would be the refutation? Good morning, Yaakov. What would be the refutation to the kavachomer? And what would Reb Shimon answer to that refutation? So mitzvah adomi ein asurim follow. So my tshuva. What refutation are the Chachamim proposing that they could use to refute Reb Shimon's kavachomer? Because you could slug it up by pointing on the other hand to Arayas. Consider Arayas. The Torah tells us that you have Arayas that are in the current generation. For example, your brother's wife, your wife's sister, your sister, etc. You have Arayas a generation up or down, your parents, your children. You have Arayas two generations up. We're talking Daraisa, that is. You have Arayas two generations up. Your grandmother is also Daraisa. Your wife's grandchildren are also, your wife's granddaughters are also Daraisa. But you don't go beyond that. The Minatoda, for example, a man would be allowed to marry his great grandmother three generations up. Midrabana, not. We learned about the Shnius earlier in the Masechta. So you can see that you have something which is also only three generations, just like Mitzrayim and Edrei, and it applies equally well to men and women. So the Chacham say to Reb Shimon, so you have a basis for saying that the same thing applies to Mitzrayim and Edrei. Even though, yes, there's a kula on them compared to Ammon and Moya, but on the other hand, there can be that Chumra that it applies to both men and women. You're going to say, Mala Arayas Chakem Koris. You're going to answer back, what kind of a proof is that? Arayas, there's an Issu Koris involved. So maybe because of that, maybe because of the Issu Koris, we're applying it to both men and women. Whereas when it comes to Mitzrayim and Edom, then there's no Koris. And the answer is Mamzer Yechiyah. Okay, you can prove the contrary from a Mamzer. There's no Koris in marrying a Mamzer or having relations with a Mamzer. It's only an Isur Lav. It applies to both men and women. A male or a female mamzer is both also. But you're going to say Malam mamzer chakain enu roi lav b'kol la'olam. On the other hand, you're going to say a mamzer is no proof because he can never enter the kotel. He can never, we're going to have later on Ayin Ches Amud Beis, in the Mishnah, it's going to say that we're going to have an opinion, or actually in the Gemara, we're going to have an opinion that you're allowed, that a mamzer is mutter after 10 dervis, but we're going to see that most of the Chachamim disagree with that. But anyway, so you're going to say that a mamzer is also forever, and therefore, so maybe there was a chumra on that. But again, Arayas, we'll go back to Arayas, where it's not forever, because again, it's only three generations. V'chazer adin, so it's going to go back and forth like that. Loi re'izeh, kiri izeh, loi re'izeh, kiri izeh. Each one, a mamzer and arayas, have a factor that the other one doesn't have. Atzada shavashavan, but what do they have in common? Shasurin, that in both cases is an isser. Ve'echad tzchorim, ve'echad mekevis, and that it applies to both men and women. So therefore, so on the basis of that, on the basis of that Sada Shava, we can say that the same thing would apply to a mitzvi and to a mitzvi and a mitzvah, and of course the same thing is true of an adomi, that also the that also they'd be also both men and women. But the Gemara says Malak Sada Shava Shabahenchiken Yeshba and Sadakaris. After all, you have another Sada Shava in them. In both the Mamzer and Arias, there is a factor of Kores involved. The Mamzer himself came from a relationship that's Chayav Kores. Arias, all of them are Chayav Kores. How do you compare that with Mitzrayim and Edom, where there's no Kores at all? There's no Tzad of Kores at all. So therefore, so that Tzad HaShava wouldn't work. But V'Rabbanan, so what are the Chachamim answer to that? They say, Mecholo the Chayve Ese, V'Cherev Elazim and Yah. They say, they would say like this. You have a case where a Kohen Gadol is over on an Isser Eser. We learned earlier in the Masechta that a Kohen Gadol has a mitzvah to marry a Besula. Now, suppose that the woman is not otherwise also to Kohenim. She's not a Gurusha, she's not an Almana, etc. But she is not a Besula. So then if he were to marry her, he's being over on that Isser Eser where it says, V'hu Isha V'Besula HaYikach. So now the question is, would the child of such a thing be a cholo? Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov holds yes. So now applying that to our Gemara over here, then the Chachamim are going to say to Rav Shimon that, so we're going with the Tzad HaShava, and you're arguing that one second, both Mamzer and Arias both involve Kores, but here's an example of someone where the children are Osir to Kohenim specifically, but they're still Osir, as a result only of an Isser Eser. Well, then the same thing with a Mitzvi and an Adomi, the same thing, a Mitzvi and an Adomi up to three generations. Also, you have an Isser Eser, because the Pasuk says that the third generation, Yavir Lahem B'Kal Hashem, implying that the first two generations cannot. So they learn. So once we have the cholol from Chayva Eser, then we can say the same thing is true of the Mitzriim and the Adomim. That the same thing, the men and the women are going to be the same. Just as in that case, the Isser is on both men and women. In other words, if the Kohen Gadol marries this non Besula, then according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the children are cholalim. Whether the children are boys or girls. So therefore, the Chachamim say you can learn from that you have an Isser, which is only an Isser Eser, and it applies to boys as well as to girls. Now, Umay Loiti, so now that we understand the Chachamim's position, so what does Reb Shimon mean when he says to the Chachamim, so now what the Chachamim said to Reb Shimon, if you learned this for Kabbalah from your Rebbeim, then good, but if not, then we can shlug it up. Namely, they're saying that we shlug it up on the basis of And they're saying we can shlug it up on the basis of that you see that there's a case where there's an Isser Eser. You can see that there's a case where there's an Isser Eser and it affects both the boys and the girls who come from that. Ein Zayin Amud Beis is about seven lines from the bottom. Umay Loiki. So now when Reb Shimon says in the Mishnah, not so, he says that I don't accept your refutation of my Kal Vachomer. And he says, he says two things. He says, Loiki, he says, not so, halacha on the Omer. So we're understanding, the Gemara is understanding that he's making two statements. Number one, he's saying your refutation of my Kal Vachomer, that I want to learn that a Mitzri and a Dermi woman is mutter to marry into the Jewish people right away. First of all, he's saying to them, your refutation is not valid for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain. Number two, even if you consider your refutation, still you should know what I'm saying is based on a halacha I learned from my Rebbeim, and therefore that's that. So Hochi Kamalu, he's telling them like this. Lidi di lo svidli de Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Myself, I don't hold of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion at all. I hold that if a Kohen Gadol were to marry a non-Besula, yes, he's being over on an Eser, but no, the children wouldn't be Halalim from it. To be a Halal or Halala, it would have to be that the Isser was a Lav, for Kohenim. So it would be if the Kohen Gadol married an Amana, the Kohen had yet married a Grusha, etc., that would create a Chol. But where it's only an Isser Eser, namely the Torah tells us Kohen Gadol needs to marry a Besula, implying if he's not a Besula, then he's over. That's not enough. According to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, that's enough to make a child a Chol. Rav Shimon says, I disagree with that whole point. Well, therefore, that means that the only cases that we have where we see that it affects both, that it affects the children, regardless whether the children are boys or girls, is the case of a mamzer. Well, a mamzer involves kares, and a rayas also involves kares. So then he tells the chachamim, so your tzadah shoga falls away. You can say that any case where there's kares, then it affects both boys and girls. But in the case of a mitzri and an adomi, there's no kares involved. So that part he's saying, I don't accept what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying, so therefore your tzadah shoga to undo my tzadah shoga falls away. And furthermore, l'didchu, and even according to you, the Svira l'chukah, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, you hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and therefore you're saying you have a valid way of refuting my Tavach Omer. Nevertheless, you should know halacha ani Omer. What I'm telling you is a halacha that I learned from my Rebbe. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, Tosfos says, when he says halacha ani Omer, he doesn't mean a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, because then how would they be able to argue with him? It's interesting that so actually the Hagos Ma'arav Ransburg refers over here to a tshuva from the Chavis Yor. The Chavis Yor was asked about when we say that certain halachas halacha l'moshe. Well, the original question was the Rambam writes that halachas l'moshe m'Sinai could never be forgotten and there could never be any machlokes on them. Mm-hmm. And someone asked the Chavis Yor, is that really so? It seems from there's a Tosfos elsewhere that seems to say that halachas l'moshe m'Sinai could be forgotten. So first the Chavis Yor says, so what? The Tosfos and the Rambam are allowed to argue with each other. But then he goes on to say that actually you have to really define what we mean by halachas l'moshe m'Sinai. And he mentions various places in Shas. He goes through systematically the places in Shas where we find one. And he says, we see actually there do seem to be cases where something that's a halachas l'moshe m'Sinai was in fact forgotten and needed to be reconstructed. So he ends up saying, what? Well, the Oseas HaKsiva, that's something, right, he actually mentions that about the script that they once used Ksav Ivre and then they used Ksav Ashuri. No, but even that might not, no, but that it's in Sanhedrin. But in any case, I don't know that it calls that halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, but in any case, that's not necessarily a proof, because even if we say that the Hamoin Am had forgotten, that doesn't mean we're talking about where even the Chachamim forgot it. The point is, he says, what it may be is like this. When a Chacham says, I learned something, halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, then the other Chachamim have to take him at his word. And then they can't argue with him. Because they know he's not lying, Chas v'Shalom. So therefore, if he says it's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, then he means it. Here, that's why Tosfos stresses over here that Rav Shimon is not saying what I'm saying is halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. Then the Chachamim would have to give in. All he's saying is, this is a halacha that I learned from my Rebbe. Okay, so the Chachamim are saying that, fine, your Rebbe maybe based that on the Kavachomer that you're saying, and we hold like Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, and therefore we have a way to undo the Kavachomer, so therefore we don't have to accept your opinion. They can say, halacha in a Kabbal, we can accept that you said that you learned this halacha from your Rebbe, doesn't mean that we have to accept it as the last word in halacha.
You know, it's amazing, it's mind-blowing that they believe a person will not forget something. They trust him that he's not going to forget something.
No, one second. It's not that they trust that a person won't forget something. If he says that something is halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, it means he's making a statement. So they're not going to say that he's lying and this is not halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. That he forgot. Sure, it could be that he forgot.
So they might counteract. No, you forgot.
But no. Okay. Let's go on. Okay. So Tanya, we learn in a braise. So Omer lahen Reb Shimon, halacha ani Omer. Reb Shimon is saying to the Chachamim, number one, I learned this as a halacha. But oid mikra m'sayeni bonim v'lo bonis. Besides which, Reb Shimon says, I have a pasuk on my side. After all, the pasuk says about the mitzvah and adomi, bonim asher yivodu lahem dor shlishi, the sons who are born to them in the third generation, yavu lahem b'kal Hashem. So bonim implies v'lo bonis, and not daughters, implying that daughters can enter the Jewish people right away. So let's talk about that. So that's part of Reb Shimon's argument. Amr Reb Yehuda. Reb Yehuda says you can't learn like that. After all, the pasuk doesn't just say bonim; it says who will be born to them in the third generation, meaning a kosev tlon b'leida, meaning the pasuk makes it depend on the fact that they were born. Well, girls are born also, so therefore the pasuk is implying that the word bonim does not mean over here only sons; it means children in general. I'll show you voldu that will be born.
The pasuk says in the third generation.
So the third generation means that means that the grandchildren of the original Ger or Giyotis can intermarry into the Jewish people. So if you have John, a Mitzri, becomes a Ger and takes the name Avraham, and he marries, as we're going to discuss, a Giyotis, and they have a son Yitzchak, and Yitzchak marries a Giyotis, and they have a son Yaakov, then Yaakov is allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. But not before that. But the point is, Rabbi Yehuda says, since it says Hashem Yevoldu, then it means it's not only bonim, it's not only sons, it means both boys and girls, both sons and daughters, are both also until in the first and second generation. Because it says Yevoldu, that they will be born. Implying that it applies to any children who are born. So, Amr of Yechanan, he loved Amr of Yehuda, Kosov, Tlon, Velega. You should know something, if Rabbi Yehuda had not brought up that point, that Yevoldu means that it depends on later, that it depends on where, on them being born. If not for that, Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't have been able to find his hands and feet in the Beis Medrash. In other words, it would have been a clear contradiction to another din that he says. Because, given to Amamar, how Gerim Ikri Kahol. Now, we have a machloikas like this. We were discussing until now the question we discussed yesterday, whether, for example, a Ger from Ammon or Moab is allowed to marry a Giyotis. And Bash says, yeah, you know, what's the problem? The point is like this, though. The Torah tells us that a male Ger from Ammon or Moab is not allowed to enter the Kahal Hashem. Now, what is considered Kahal Hashem? We know that it definitely means the born Jewish people. Does it also include Gerim? Rabbi Yehuda holds that it does. He holds Kahal Gerim, the congregation of Gerim, is also called a Kahal. So according to him, anybody that Torah says, a Psua Daka, a Ger from Ammon, etc., a Mamzer, anybody that says, Lo Yoved, the Kahal Hashem, means they can't marry a Ger. Well, given that Rabbi Yehuda says that, Mitzri Sheni, B'mai Yitar, then you have to ask, how would a Mitzri Sheni ever be able to have children who are going to be the third generation, who are now able to intermarry into the Jewish people? If according to Rabbi Yehuda, he's not allowed to marry a Giyotis, then he's going to be stuck. Only because he's saying a kosev tlon b'leida. In other words, like this. If we were to say that a Giyotis from Mitzrayim or Edom is right away allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people, then she would be part of Kahal Hashem. So therefore, that would mean a mitzvah of the first or second generation, a male, wouldn't be able to marry her. Well, then who is he going to be able to marry that he's going to have a second generation and a third generation? Only because Rabbi Yehuda is saying that a kosev tlon b'leida, meaning that both the men and the women from Mitzrayim and from Edom cannot yet intermarry into the Jewish people. Therefore, according to that, then they're definitely not part of Kahal Hashem. He holds that Kahal Hashem means all the Jews who are able to intermarry. Well, therefore, that includes regular Gerim from other nations where they're allowed to go in right away. And it includes women from Ammon and Moab, because we said Ammoni, Vlay, Ammonis, etc. And it includes, if we were to say that it also includes women from Mitzrayim and from Edom, then there'd be nobody for a Mitzri of the first or second generation to marry. Or at least where his children would be mutter in the third generation. Yeah, he could marry a Mamzeris, but then his kids are going to be Mamzerim, so that's not going to help. We want a third generation that Yavilahem B'Kal Hashem. So therefore, only because he's saying that the Isser of Mitzrim and Adomim applies to both the men and the women, that gives us an opening. So now the Mitzri Rishon can marry a Mitzri Rishona, or he can marry a woman, a Giyotis from Mitzrayim or from Edom. Same thing the second generation. You know, so it's necessary, it had to be, Rabbi Yehuda had to hold, not like Rabbi Shimon, the men and the women are both Osir, otherwise there'd be nobody for a Mitzri Ger to marry and you never have a third generation. So the Gemara says, why? That's not a proof. Dilma di'i ovav nasiv. Maybe the Pasuk is telling us that if a Mitzvah of the first or second generation was over and married a Bas Yisrael, then eventually you get to a third generation and you have a Lahem B'Kal Hashem. So how does that prove that we're saying that he's allowed to? The Gemara says, di'i loik sivkra. No, the Pasuk doesn't phrase things if you did something ba'aveva. The Pasuk is saying, after all, Bonim Hashem Yevoldu Lahem Dor Shlish, third generation, Yavo Lahem B'Kal Hashem, the Pasuk wouldn't deal with that case if it came about through an Issa. Obviously, all over the place, the Torah tells us, if such and such an Issa was done, then here is the din. But for the Torah to be telling us like this, Yavo Lahem B'Kal Hashem, in other words, if there was an actual Issa, then the Torah would be phrasing it something like that. A Mitzri Rishon or Sheni is not allowed Lo Yavo B'Kal Hashem. But if he did, then here's what happens. But for the Torah to say like that, Or not even. The Torah is giving us a heter over here. The Torah is giving us a heter, the third generation. The Torah doesn't give us a heter that results from having done something of Isser. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Harei mamzer de'iva kas v'kra. What do you mean? You're assuming, the Machshon is assuming, that what the Gemara meant was that any case that involves where something was done where it shouldn't have done, then the Torah doesn't tell us what the results are. What do you mean? A mamzer, yeah, is de'i, you have people who had relations where there's an issur kares involved, and we're saying that there's a din of a mamzer. And so the pasuk does tell us about contingencies like that. The answer is, de'i le'isura kasev, de'i le'hatera like kasev. The answer is, the Torah tells us de'i cases, if cases, hypothetical cases, where there's an isser. Namely, the mamzer is not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. So we need to know what happened. You're not allowed to have these relationships. But if you did, then what's the din of the child? And the Torah needs to tell us. But to say that if you were over, and the Torah is going to tell you a heter, now as a result of you having done an isser, now you have a child who's able to enter the Kal Hashem, the pasuk is not going to phrase things like that. Okay, the Gemara says, "Harimatzel grushosay deila heter v'kasei." What about the case that we've talked about a number of times in the Masechta, where a man divorced his wife, she remarried somebody else, then that somebody else died or divorced her. The Torah tells us she's not allowed to return to her first husband, but if they did, then they're oivan isur lahav. However, we learned earlier in the Masechta that there's a word in the pasuk over there. It says kisei eva he, and we learn from that he te'eva ve'ein baneha te'evin, that the children are, from such a thing, are not also. The children, even though their parents were Ovan and Issur Lav, the children are not affected by it. They're not mamzerim or anything. So there we have an example of De'i, where the pasuk is implying that if they did something of Issur, nevertheless, the Torah is implying a heter for the children. So you see that the Torah does talk about such cases where you did something that was Issur, and nevertheless, you should know that there's a heter for the children. The answer is hasta from ikiri suru dekasve. The answer is there to begin with. Why did the Torah give that scenario? Mainly in order to tell us the Easter that the woman is also to return to her husband after having been married in between. Incidentally, the Torah is mentioning that, by the way, if she does, if she's over on that and she does, then the children are kosher. Well, a man is makadish a woman, right? He gives her the pruta and says hareat mekudesh.
If he was married in between,
he's allowed to have many wives, right?
But there would be no rabbin that would marry them again. I mean, how would they get married again?
Well, I mean, yeah, let's say they found, you don't really need a rav to be masada kedushin. What you need is aiden. So you have aiden. Let's stand there, and maybe they don't even know that she was previously divorced. It doesn't matter really. The point is that So we will have a de'i case in the Torah. In other words, where the Torah will tell us you're not supposed to do such and such. But if you did, then the de'eved, here is the status of your children, but only when that's incidental to something else, as in the case of Masiv Rishasi, where mainly the Torah is presenting for us the Isser that she's not allowed to get remarried to her first husband. But to have that out of the blue, the Torah is going to tell us that a Mitzri or a Dovi of the first or second generation is not allowed to marry the Kal Hashem. But if he was over on that, then you should know eventually there'll be a Dor Shlishi that's allowed, that the Torah is not going to do. Therefore, that means, in other words, there has to be a way that's mutter for a Mitzri or an Adoimi to be able to get married and eventually have children who will be the Dor Shlishi. And that requires us to say, as Rabbi Yehuda said, that both the men and the women from Mitzrayim and from Edom are in fact not part of Kal Hashem yet, because they're not allowed to freely intermarry into the Jewish people. All other Gerim, Rabbi Yehuda would say, are part of Kal Hashem. Therefore, according to him, Mitzri or Edom, you wouldn't be able to marry them. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Now, let's talk about, we said that it says bonim, asher yivoldu lahem dor shlishi, and Reb Shimon wants to learn out from the word bonim that it means specifically only boys. And then we have also, but, so now, we have like this, the pasuk says, bonim asher yivoldu lahem dor shlishi, so bonim said, according to Reb Shimon, means only the men, only the boys. Asher yivoldu lahem, Reb Yehuda counters, means anyone who's born, both boys and girls. And then the pasuk continues, dor shlishi, the third generation. Now, why does, so the question is, why it changes the expression? Why does it say bonim asher yivoldu lahem bonim shlishim or something? So im nema bonim lama nema doris, vim nema doris, lama nema bonim. Why does it use different expressions? First it uses bonim and then it uses doris. So like this, Im nema bonim v'lo nema doris, because if you only said bonim without mentioning generations, how you see oimer, then you would misunderstand the pasuk and say bonim and say ben rishin v'sheni osu shlishi mutter. You know what it means? It means that if the mitzvi becomes a ger, then his first or second son is also lover b'kol, but his third son would be mutter. So he becomes a ger. He takes the name Avraham, let's say. He marries a gyura sara. They have three boys, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. You would think it means Reuven and Shimon are not allowed to be bal b'kol, but Levi is.
So therefore, that's not
going to
fly.
No, you would think. So therefore, lachach nemadurus. Therefore, the pasuk says generations, meaning we're not talking about the same generation brothers. We're talking about one generation after another. Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The im nemadurus for my nemabonim. On the other hand, if it only said generations and didn't say anything about children, then you would say maybe the whole mitzvah is addressed only to those who are standing at Har Sinai. In other words, the Torah is telling you, you Jewish people who stood at Har Sinai, who went out of Mitzrayim and who have the heir of God among you, the first and second generation of your descendants are not allowed to marry anybody from the heir of God. But the third generation of your descendants already would be allowed to. L'chach nema bonim. Therefore, the pasuk also has to use the word bonim, making it clear that we mean the children of the ger, not the generation since Matan Torah.
They were apostles to marry the heir of God.
Well, because the heir of Rav came from Mitzrayim, right?
But they
I mean, you could argue maybe if the heir of Rav, were in the sky or before Matan Torah, maybe, like we said the other day, Tosfos Hashanim said that's how Kolev was able to marry Vaspare. But, okay, yeah.
Vaspare?
Yeah, Vaspare. The Pasuk mentions a different...
Rachel, too.
Rachel was Yeshua. That's a different matter. That's the seven nations. That's a different, yeah. Okay,
Should
now.
Have any wedding ceremonies? The kind of the chumash that we have any word about?
Yitzchak and Rivka is the only one I know about.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Anyway. Next. Lahem. Now, the Pasuk says, Bonim asher yivodu lahem, dor shlishi, yavu lahem b'kal Hashem. So why that extra lahem means mehem mineh. It means you count from them, meaning, in other words, that the ger himself is the first generation. Otherwise, you would think dor shlishi maybe starts from his children. So Lohem makes it clear that Mitzri, or the Adomi himself, who's the Skyer, he's the first generation. Then when it says further again in the Pasuk Lohem, it says, Yobi Lohem B'Kal Hashem, means Holach Achap Sulon, means that if you have a marriage between an apostle and a kosher, then you follow them, meaning, let's say, as we said before, a Mitzri might be over and marry a Bas Yisrael. So now the Pasuk is informing us that the child of that is still considered a mitzvah. So because it goes according to the father, that's what we're saying. In other words, so if a mitzvah became a ger and takes the name Avraham and now he's a Bas Yisrael, where he's also by Isser Eser to do that, the child is still considered a mitzvah sheni. Don't think because his mother is a born Jewish woman, therefore he's considered a full Jew, and therefore he can freely intermarry into the Jewish people. No, he's a mitzvah sheni. And the same thing in the next generation. Because we're gonna explain as we go along in the Gemara, the concept that we go according to the mother is when you have the Chamon Litzlan, a mixed marriage between a Yid and a Goy. Here we're talking about that the Goy became a Yid, became a Ger. So now we say that we go according to the one who's more possible. In general, we're going to see on the base that is true. In general, when you have marriages between two Jews, and one of them is apostle, then we go according to that. We're going to talk about it further down on the Almud, and we're going to talk about that more on the base. Okay, so the Gemara says ve'itzrich l'michtav lahem ve'itzrich l'michtav asher yivodu. Now we said the word lahem, the first lahem teaches us that they're the first generation. And we also need the word Asher Yivoldu, which Rashi points out on the face of it, the implications of those two words contradict each other. Lahem, we're saying, means that they're the first generation. Asher Yivoldu sounds like we start counting the three generations only from their children. So why is it saying both, and how do we reconcile that? So de'ikot Rahman Asher Yivoldu, if it only said the word Asher Yivoldu, habaminim ibnehem, minei, you would think it means you start counting from their children. So the Goy himself, who became a Ger, would be generation zero, and then you'd have generation one, two, and three, so only his great-grandchildren could intermarry into the Jewish people. Kos Rahman Alahem, therefore the Pasuk says Lahem, to tell us that not, that they're the first generation. De'ikot Rahman Alahem, but on the other hand, if it only said Lahem, without Asher Yivoldu, habaminim, you would think, what about Mitzvism Uberes Shinis Gaira? It's supposed that a woman from Mitzrayim becomes a ger while she's becomes a geyrus while she's pregnant. Maybe you would think he or Nochad, she and her son both count as the first generation, because after all, her son was conceived as a goy, so maybe then we still consider him a ger as well. No, because Rahman Asher Yivoldu, therefore the Torah tells us Asher Yivoldu to tell us that any birth that took place after the geyrus is considered a new generation. So the mother will be the first generation, the unborn baby, once he's born already, will be the second generation.
That's interesting. I think that happened with Ariel Sharon. His mother
is a Giyaris. I don't know that.
Yeah. His mother is a Giyaris. I don't know exactly when.
Interesting. Okay.
Ariel Sharon?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, let's talk about it afterwards.
Which word do you learn?
So we're learning it from Asher Yivoldu. We're saying it doesn't matter. It's true the child was conceived when his parents were goyim, and therefore, in a certain sense, he is considered a ger. For example, actually, la halacha, even if he and his father both become gerim, he has no relationship, la halacha, to his father. Just like if they became gerim both after they were both born. However, what we're saying is, in terms of the generations of Mitzrim, then nevertheless, he still counts as the second generation because his mother was the first.
But there was no problem with Ashraf because the Rebbe sent him to leave Tzina.
Okay, let's
talk. To show that, you know.
Yeah, okay, fine. Let's talk about him later. The fact is, keep in mind that this, the oldest discussion over here about Mitzrim and Amonim and whatever, we said yesterday that Amram writes that based on the Gemara that we learned yesterday, that since Sancheirev mixed up all the nations, then nowadays we can't identify anymore who's a Mitzri, who's an Ammoni, who's an Adoni, etc. And therefore, any Ger of the Urus is allowed to marry into the Jewish people right away. The whole concept that you have to wait three generations was only when we could identify who were the original Mitzri and who were the original Adoni.
Yeah.
Okay. Next. So now the Gemara points out, here's another point that it says that we have two psukim that seem to teach us the same din. And when we need both them, the itzrich l'michtav lahem hocha, the itzrich l'michtav loy gabi mamzer. Now we have over here where it says yavi lahem b'kal Hashem, and then you have a few pesukim earlier where it says a mamzer lo yavi mamzer b'kal Hashem lo gamzer asira lo yavi loy b'kal Hashem adorla. So why does it need to say loy by the mamzer as well as lahem by the mitzvah? Which means so by the mitzvah we said it means. That if a mitzvi is over and marries a bas yisrael, the child is still considered a mitzvi. So now why do we need to, so why do we need the same thing by mamzer? So the itzrich, so we need it. The ikot rachmana hocha, if it only said it over here by the mitzvim, you would say, you know why we're machmir and say the child is considered to be a mitzvi, mishum debami tipa psula, because he comes from a drop which is possible, meaning in other words, his father was a mitzvi, and then therefore you would say that they're therefore that status is transmitted to his children. Aval mamzer debami tipa ksheira, but a mamzer, after all, the beer itself was osir, but he comes from a Yisrael who's tahor. So you aim a law, you would think maybe not. Maybe if a mamzer marries a bas yisrael, the status of mamzerus does not get transmitted to his children. Because after all, he comes from parents who are both Jews. So therefore, we need the pasuk by mamzer. The ikos rachmana gabi mamzer, vice versa, if it only said it by him, you would say, you know why? There's a chumra by him, mishum de'en roi love of a kol la'olam. Because look, we're saying that gam dor asiri, even the 10th generation of mamzerim, can't enter and intermarry into the Jewish people. Aval hocha imaloi, but by a mitzvim, you would think, after all, it expires after three generations, so therefore there's a kula on it. So maybe that kula would also allow us to say that a mitzvim marries a bas yisrael, then the child is considered a full yisrael rather than a second generation mitzvim.
So we learned that it's not true.
So we learn that's not true, tzricha, and that's why we need both the word loy and lahem, both loy by the mamzer and lahem by the mitzvah. In both cases, we're saying holach achab sulan, you go according to the one who is possible. So in the case of a mamzer marries a bas yisrael, the status of mamzerus is transmitted to the children, and they are mamzerim as well, and gam durasri, even the 10th generation, won't be able to intermarry. In the case, it continues forever, yeah. In the case of the mitzvah, what it means is that because the father was a mitzvah ger, then therefore the child, so he's the first generation, so the child will be the second generation. The child will have to marry a giyoris, as we said before, and then the children will be mutter lover because.
Oh, if the child marries a giyoris, it changes the status.
Well, then because if the child marries a giyoris, he's allowed to, and then fine, the third. So no, we said at the top of the Almud, even if the child was over and married a bas yisrael, the child is still a third generation mitzvah, and at that point is allowed. What we're saying is, if he wants to marry behetu, he doesn't want to be over on an isra esa, then he's going to have to marry a giyoris. So now, the Gemara continues. Amar Rabba Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Mitzri Sheni, Shenosa Mitzri Srishona. Suppose now you have a second generation Mitzri who marries a first generation Mitzri. So, you have on one side, a Goy became a Ger and took the name Avraham. He has a son, Yitzhak. Now Yitzhak marries a woman who just became, Yitzhak marries Rivka, where Rivka herself just became a Gioris. She's not the daughter of a Mitzri Ger.
She's a Mitzri that became a
Gioris. She's a Mitzri that became a Gioris. That's what we're saying. So Rabbi Yochanan says, b'nosh lishi havoi, the child will be considered a shlishi. Because since the mother is a sheni, then therefore, since the father is a sheni, then therefore the child is now a shlishi. The mother is a rishon, doesn't matter, says Rabbi Yochanan.
So that's
Alma, kasava, basidi de shadinimai. So you see that Rabbi Yochanan holds you follow the father in this.
Yeah.
But the Gemara says, masiv Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, in that case, I have a contradiction. We learn in a Mishnah in Kiddushin, Rabbi Tarfin Omi Yecholan Mamzerim Litar. Rabbi Tarfin points out, even though we're saying that the status of Mamzerus gets transmitted from generation to generation, so therefore, on the face of it, a person is a Mamzer, then his descendants ad Olam Mamzerim. Rabbi Tarfin says, there's actually a way that a Mamzer can make his children Tahor. Ketzad, Mamzer Nosa Shifcha, suppose that he marries a Shifcha, Havlad Eben. Then the child will be an Eved because he follows the mother. Shichuroi, now if he frees that Eved, Nimsa Ben Chorin, then he's a Ben Chorin, and the status of Mamzerus disappears, because there's no such thing as an Eved who's a Mamzer. So now he's a regular Ben Chorin. He's like a regular Eved who was freed. And therefore, so now he's biologically descended from the Mamzer, but yet he's a Kosher Yid. Alma Bosidi Dasha Dinamai. So we see that we follow her, not him. So what are you telling me that in the case of the Mitzri Rishon and Mitzri Sheda, Mitzri Sheni and Mitzri Shoshona, we follow him? The answer is Shiny Hossam. It's different in that case where there's a Shifcha involved. After all, the Pasuk says about an Eved Ivri, who's in a relationship with a Shifcha Knanis, the Pasuk says that the woman and her children go to the master, meaning that so there the Torah makes it clear that the children of a Shifcha follow her. But here we're not talking about Shifcha, here we're talking about the Ger and Gioris, so therefore we can very well say that it follows the father. However, Masiv Rava, but Rava says, I have another contradiction. We learned this yesterday. Amr of Yehuda, or Min Yamin Ger Mitzri Hoyli Chavim Talmidei Rav Akiva, 2 days, or whatever, we learned it a couple of days ago. We said that Rav Yehuda had said, I had a colleague among the Talmidim of Rav Akiva called Min Yamin, who was a Ger from Mitzrayim. But Omar, so he says, Ani Mitzri Rishon, I am a first generation Mitzri Ger, Benasasi Mitzri Sushona. I married a woman who was also a Gioris of the first generation. So now our children are second generation. Asi Bivni Mitzri Shnia. I will make sure that my son marries a Mitzri Shnia, Kadeshia Ben Bni, Roy Love of a Kahal. This way my grandchildren will already be able to freely intermarry into the Jewish people. Now, the point is, Rava is saying, the Isaf Dada Basri Didei Shadinanlay, if you say you follow the father in this, like Rabbi Yochanan is saying, why does Min Yamin have to say that my son Dafka has to marry a Mitzvah Shnia after the Rishon Anami? It would work the same way even if he marries a first generation Mitzvah Gioris. Because after all, that's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that you go according, as long as the father was a Sheni, then the child was a Shlishi. So why is Min Yamin saying I have to have Dafka marry a Mitzvah Sheni? And the answer is, you should know, in fact, for that reason, Rabbi Yochanan said to the Tana, who taught Braisa in front of him, fix up the Braisa. It doesn't say that he's saying that I'm going to have to marry him off to a Shnia. He's saying I'm going to marry him off to some kind of Mitzri Dioris, even a Rishona. Because even a Rishona would work, because as long as the son is a Sheni, which he is, because he's been Yamin's son, then therefore the children will be a Shlish. So no proof against Rabbi Yochanan from that, because in fact Rabbi Yochanan said that the way we have the Braisa is work. Now, the Gemara continues, Ki Osir Rav Dimi Omer Rav Yechanan, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported in the name of Rav Yechanan differently. No, Mitzri Sheni Shenosa, Mitzri Shoshona, B'nos Sheni Havoi. That actually, in this case that we're talking about, where the father was a Mitzri Sheni, and the mother was a Mitzri Shoshona, the child will actually be a Sheni. So he'll be the same status as his father, but in one generation down from his mother. Alma Basa Ime Shabinamai, showing that Rav Yechanan holds, after all, that you go according to the mother. So you go according to the mother then, so in this case, the child is a shame. But, Omalei Abaya says to Rav Dimi, how does that work? Elohad to Amr Rav Yochanan, in that case, then how does that fit with something else that Rav Yochanan said? So in other words, it comes out, in effect, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying that this is an example of uber yerech ima, that the child is considered to be a part of his mother, and therefore that we say that it goes according to her. When he was in her womb, he's part of her. Now when he comes out, then he goes down one generation, and we ignore the fact that the father himself was a mitzvah chain. So now, but if Rabbi Yochanan holds uber yerech imayhu, then that contradicts something else that Rabbi Yochanan said. Suppose a person designated an animal for a chatas that was pregnant. A regular person's chatas is always a female animal. Only a king brings a male animal, and the kohen gadol and the tzibur brings a parrot. Hell, a parrot brings a parrot. That's a different matter. But in the regular case, a regular yid who does something that's chayav chatas, it's a female sheep or a female goat. So suppose that animal is pregnant. The yolda, and then the mother gave birth before you brought it as a korban. Then rotz miskapa bar, rotz miskapa bevlada. So then the person has the choice; he can use either one, the mother or the baby, as his chatas. So now says Abaya, iamet b'shleima uba lav yerach imayhu. If you say that the child is not considered part of the mother even when he's in the womb, then fine. That explains why this would work. Havalei kamach v'shnei chatois v'achrayus. Because in effect, this is the equivalent of setting aside to begin with two animals in the chatas as the main one and as a backup. Sometimes a person might want to have, he knows he needs to bring a chatas for whatever he did wrong. So what he does is, to begin with, he sets aside an animal, and then he sets aside another one for achrayos in case the first one gets lost, then he doesn't want to be left stuck. So now in that case, since neither one depends on the other, they're both two independent animals. So we know the Omer of Oshia. So Rav Oshia says the din is if that if a person does that, miskapa ba'achas mehen, he uses one of them for his kapara, whichever one he wants. Ba'ashniya tira, the second one is left to graze until it develops a mum, and then the value of it eventually goes to the nedava boxes and the besmetosh, which are used to bring oilus for the tzibur, kaitz on his beach, for bonus that are brought when it's quiet time in the besmetosh. So he ends up losing, the value of both of them, for his makdish, both of them. But the point is, in other words, like this. We have a concept which the Gemara discusses extensively in the Masechta Tmura called Chatas HaMesa. You have in some cases, you have a loch l'mishum sinai, where you have a case of a chatas that cannot be brought for one reason or another, and the halacha is you actually have to lock it up in a room, and it starves and it dies in there. Now, in this case, we don't apply that because it was to begin with, both of them were set aside l'achrayis. Each one was a backup for the other one. So therefore, we don't say that that's an example of a chatas hamesa. So if you say that the baby is not considered part of the mother, then that's exactly like taking two separate animals and designating them like that. Eli amit uber yerach imayhu. But says Abaya, if you're telling me that Rabbi Yochanan holds uber yerach imay, and that is why you're saying in the case of the mitzvim that therefore the child is considered to be part of the mother and therefore he inherits her status, well, one generation down. If so, then in the case of the chatas, havalei vlad chatas, then what you have here is the case of a baby of a chatas. Uvlad chatas l'misa ozo. We know that one of the five cases of chatois hamesis is vlad chatas, where exactly that, where an animal of a chatas had a baby. And this is one of the chatois hamesis. This is one of the ones we're going to have to lock it up. So how can we say that, how can Rabbi Yochanan be saying that he could use the baby as a korban if he wanted to, when it's supposed to be chatas hamesa and you can't bring it as a korban?
Can compare a person to a car?
Apparently, because we're talking about uber yerachimo. We're talking about, is the child considered part of the mother's body? Pregnancy works basically the same in animals as it does in people. So if you're going to say the baby is considered part of the mother regarding the mitzvah, then it should be considered as far as the chatas as well. And if not, then not. So Rabbi Yochanan is being inconsistent. Ishtik. So Rabbi Dimi was quiet. He couldn't think of an answer to that. So then Abaya said to him, Dilma shiny hossam, dichtibashi yvoldu akosat floy beleda. You know what? Maybe we can find a reason to differentiate. Because after all, by the mitzvi, the pasuk says, as we quoted before, the pasuk says, shay yvoldu. We said it makes it depend on birth. So it's not a matter of that the child necessarily is part of the mother and therefore inherits her status. But because he was born from this mother, then therefore that birth gives him the status of, gives him the status of whatever generation of mitzvah. Omalei, sort of Dimi says to him, Karkafna, Kafkafna is related to the word kafkafta, meaning a head. So it means Adam Choshev. It means, well, we call a kafkafta, we use the expression kafkafta, meaning kafkafta is blemanach tefillin, means somebody who never put on tefillin. But the word kafkafta itself means a head, and particularly kafkafna means like a person who has a big head, meaning Adam Choshev, an important person. Chazina, he says kafkafna, chazise l'reishach b'nei amud. I saw your head between the pillars of the Beis Medrash. So one point is, Rav Dimi might be saying to Abaya, you know what, I'm very impressed. You weren't there in the Beis Medrash, but it's as if you were there. It's as if I saw your head there when the discussion was going on, because that's exactly what Rav Yechanan said. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, Reishach actually means your head, as in your Rebbe. He's telling him, your Rebbe, Rabba, was Abaya's uncle, and also his Rebbe, and also his Rabbi Mova, for a period of time learned under Rabbi Yechon and Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Rabbi Dimi is telling Abaya, don't think that you just came up with this great chiddush yourself. You must have heard it from your uncle, from your Rebbe, Rabba, who was there in the Beis Medrash at the time, and he told it to you, and now you remember it. Anyway, so that's what it is. I saw your head, or I saw your Rebbe over there between the pillars when Rabbi Yechanan said this teaching. So in other words, Rashi says basically the same thing. It means, what you're saying that you're learning from Asher Yivoldu, it's not your own idea. You must have heard it from Rabbah, who in turn was there in the Beis Medrash many years ago when Rabbi Yechanan said this. So that's it. Time to see Asher Yivoldu. That only over here, because it says Asher Yivoldu, do we say that it follows the mother. Now the implication is that in all other cases we would follow the father, where both parents are Jews. The question is, Ela Hod Omar Rava. The question is, what about what Rava says, Nochris Mo Beres Shinis Gaira, B'na Ein Sarach Tzvila, where the Rava says, a din, that if a goyish woman who's pregnant, becomes a geodis and she tovels in the mikveh. So now the son does not need his own tefillah afterwards. Why? Because he's part of his mother. So amai ein tzarich tefillah. So now you would have to ask, why doesn't he need tefillah himself? Why shouldn't he have to be considered a ger on his own? V'chitema meshumdir of Yitzchak. You're going to answer on the basis of what Rabbi Yitzchak says, that it's not a problem of chatzitza. In other words, that even though he's in the womb and obviously he's not touching the mikveh water, nevertheless it's considered as if he did. So in other words, in effect, when the mother toivels, then he is toiveling at the same time. And that would be, d'omer of Yitzchak, d'var Torah rubo yomak b'dol of chaitzitz, mina Torah, something as a chatzitza, only if it covers the majority of the body and the person doesn't want it to be there. But rubo she'en amak b'dol of any chaitzitz, midaraisa, even if something covers the majority of the body, if the person doesn't care whether it's there, doesn't mind having it there, then it's not a chatzitza. In this case, nobody minds that the baby is inside the womb. The baby himself certainly doesn't mind. So we would say that. Yeah, that would be an example. So that's actually mute. So what it is that the Gemara discusses in other places, that midrabbanon, if it's either your machmir or it's roiv, then it's chotzitz. It has to be, in order for it not to be a chatzitza, it would have to be miutai and a machmir olav. But anyway, but on a daraisa level, it needs to be both. So the baby obviously doesn't mind that he's in the mother's womb. So therefore, on a daraisa level, it would be a valid tefillah. Can't be that that's the reason why the baby doesn't need the tefillah. Yeah, because, one second. Because Rav Kahana explained, even Rav Yitzchak's din only applies where the chatzitza is on the majority of the body. But if the whole thing, if a person was completely covered up with something that's a chatzitza, and they toibled, even at a daraisa level, it wouldn't work. The baby is completely enveloped within the mother. So how can you say that just because that on the basis of the dinim of chatzitza, therefore it should be a valid tefillah? If we're saying then that the baby doesn't need tefillah, it must be because he's considered uber yarechimah. So implying, in other words, that we go, according to the mother. So how are you telling me that in general we go according to the father's status, and only in this case of the mitzvi do we go according to the mother's status because it says Asher Yivoldu? And the answer is shiny uber dehainu revise. The difference is because the baby, that's the normal way he grows, so it's not considered a chatzitza at all. You were assuming it's considered a chatzitza because the mother's body is in the way, and therefore you have to figure out about the din of chatzitza. Now we're saying that no, the baby it's the normal way that right now he's in the womb, therefore it's not considered a chatzitza at all. The mikveh water is not physically touching him, doesn't matter. But that doesn't necessarily show that we're going according to the mother in this particular case. We're saying that when the mother toivels, the baby is toiveling along with her. even though he's in the womb, and therefore he doesn't need his own tefillah later on.
But that would work with anything else.
No, it wouldn't work with, because we're saying Hainu Ravise, where it grows normally that way, then it's not considered a chatzitza. Okay. Now, continuing this discussion. So it could be that ordinarily we go according to the father, but in this particular case, because it's part of the mother, even if we don't say uber yerachimayu, the fact that it's normal for him to grow inside the womb means therefore we can't consider it a chatzitza. Okay. So the Gemara says, Ki Oster Ravina Amar Rav Yechanan, when Ravina came, or Ravin actually it may be, because usually in the Gemara it's Ravdimi comes from Eretz Yisrael, and then afterwards Ravin comes. Anyway, he says in the name of Rav Yechanan, V'umas Holoch Achar Azachar, the rule is like this. When we're talking about within the nations, within the Goyish nations, then you go according to the, man. As we're going to see an example in the Gemara what that means. Nisgayim, if then they become gerim, holach ha-pogum shebishneihem, then as far as the dinim of yuchsin are concerned, you go according to whichever one is pogum, whichever one has the lower status. The lower status, yes. So what meaning, in other words, as we said about mitzvi rishon and mitzvi sheni. So it wouldn't matter. So before we were saying, does it go according to the father, does it go according to the mother? Now we're saying it goes according to whichever of them has the weaker status. So if a mitzvi rishon marries a mitzvi shniya, or vice versa, either way, the child is a shame. He inherits the status of the weaker parent, so to speak. Meaning that in the story of Binyamin that we talked about on Amud Aleph, he would in fact have to make sure that his son marries a mitzvah shniya. If his son marries a mitzvah rishona, then it resets the clock. So he'd have to actually make sure that it, now, we learned the other day, by the way, Tosfos had brought from a Tesefta that continues, where Rabbi Akiva tells Binyamin, you're making a mistake, you don't have to worry about it b'chlal, because I'm afraid of mixed up all the nations, but that's another matter. When the dinim of mitzvim, of mitzvim are in effect, then yes, he would have to make sure that the mitzvi sheni marries a mitzvi shnila. So what do we mean, b'umas halachaka azachar? K'detanya, we learn in a b'raisa. Minayim la'echem in a'umas shabal ha'knamis. Suppose that a man from a different nation comes to Eretz Yisrael and marries a Knani woman, of a holed bein, and they have a son. How do we know she'atzer ashoy l'knoise be'eved? How do we know you're allowed to buy that slave as an that child as an eved? Now let's consider the Torah tells us about the seven nations of Canaan that you have to wipe them out. With a chayuk on the shama. So is this child considered a Canaan? If he was, you can't have him as an eved. You have to kill him. So no, you're allowed to. How do we know shenema? Because the pasuk says in last week's parasha in Bahar, v'gam mibnei ateshavim agorim imochem. Also from the children of the settlers who live among you, meaning goyim from other nations who came and settled in Eretz Yisrael, hagorim imachem, where they live among you in Eretz Yisrael, mehem tiknu, from them you're allowed to buy slaves. In other words, we're talking about a man from someplace else who moved to Eretz Yisrael, married a local girl, and settled down over there. The child goes according to the father, and therefore he's not considered a Canaan. He's considered whatever nation the father came from.
What's the problem with the Canaan that you have to kill them off?
As the pasuk says, you have to wipe out the seven nations of Canaan because they were very corrupt and they were into Avodah Zarah and Arias and all kinds of problems. And the Torah repeatedly warns that you can't allow them to live among you in Eretz Yisrael. You have to destroy them because otherwise they're going to have a bad effect on them. We see in history that's exactly what happened. Sefer Shoftim, it describes how there were many enclaves of the Canaanim in Eretz Yisrael that the Jewish people didn't destroy, and sure enough, they had a bad effect, and they taught the Jewish people Avodah Zarah and all kinds of other problems, and that created problems throughout the whole period of the Shoftim.
Could that be related to the Palestinians?
Maybe, but that's a discussion for another time. But anyway. The Rambam describes when he talks about this din in Hilchos Melachim, about the mitzvah of wiping out the seven nations, he said about Ovad Zichram. Nowadays also, we can't really identify who's from the Canaanim anymore, and therefore the mitzvah doesn't apply. Okay. On the other hand, the Braisa continues, Yochol afilo echem min ha-Knanim shebo'al achas min ha-Umas v'holed bein. Now, what about the other way around? If a Knani man marries a woman from another nation and they have a son, you would think, Sha'atar ha-Shoy l'Knois v'Ebed, maybe you're also allowed to buy that child as an Ebed, maybe he's not considered a Knani. No, Tamad Laimah, Shohid Ludu ba'aretzchem, the passage continues, where they gave birth in your country, meaning, it can only be from those who were born in your country, meaning that the mother is from your country, is a Canaanist, and the father is from someplace else, but not, Rashi explains, in other words, that usually a woman stays put, and the man comes and marries her and settles there. So therefore, the ones who are born in Eretz Yisrael, then the mothers are from the Shiva Umas. are from the Canaanite nations. But the ones who are born elsewhere, very likely the mother is from a different nation and the father is a Canaanite. And we're saying that the Pasuk is telling us that if the father is a Canaanite, then yeah, he's still included in the din of Lo Sechayef on the Shama, and you can't buy him as an Eved. So as long as he's living outside Eretz Yisrael, then he's safe. But if he moves back to Eretz Yisrael, then he has the din of a Canaanite.
Where was she from again?
So we're talking about there's two cases. There can be where the mother is a Canaanite and the father is from some other nation. And you can have the other way around. What we're saying is, among the Goyim, we go according to the father. So regardless, whatever status the father was is what the child has. If the father was a Canaanite, then the child is a Canaanite and lo sechayef on the Shama. If the father was from some other nation, then you're allowed to buy him as an Eved, because then you don't have a mitzvah of killing him. Okay. So then we said Nisgayru, then we said that Yechanan has said that after they become Gerim, Holochacha Pogum Shabashneim, then we say we go according to the one who is more Pogum. So the Gemara says, B'mai, what case are we talking about? Ilema B'mitzvi Shenosa Amonis, are you talking about a Mitzvi Ger who married a woman, a Gioris from Amon? Then my Pogum Shabashneim is far. Then there's no, you can't say the Pogum Shabashneim. Pogum Shabashneim implies that both have a Pogam, but one's Pogam is bigger than the other one. But in the case of a Mitzri who marries an Ammonist, she has no Pogam at all. Ammoni Vlay Ammonist. She's allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people right away. So we can't be talking about that. Ammoni Vlay Ammonist. Ela ba Ammoni Shenosa Mitzris. So we're meaning, for example, if an Ammoni Ger marries a Mitzris. So now it depends. What's the status of the children? If then they have a boy, then he follows his father, the Ammoni, where in that case, the father has a weaker position because the men from Ammon are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. So therefore, he inherits his father's status and he's considered an Ammoni. And he also can't. So he'd have to marry a Giordas or Mamzeras or what have you. In the Keva Havi, and if the child is a girl, Shadia Bosa Mitzvahs, then she follows her mother, the Mitzvahs, she'll be a second generation Mitzvahs. So now, if we were to say that you followed her father, then that would be a Kula on her, then it would mean Ammoni Vlay Ammonis. She'd be allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people right away, because she's a woman who's descended from Ammon. But because her mother was a mitzvah, then instead we give her the status of a mitzvah. So now she's the second generation mitzvah. So that's what we mean. Holochacha pogum shvishneim. We're here. Each one of them has a pogam, and the pogam is going to be different for boys than for girls. So that's what we're saying, that we do that.
So again, his pogam is.
So his pogam is the fact that he's an amori, and the males in his family are never allowed. Her pogam is that she's a mitzvah, and for three generations, both boys and girls are going to be barred. So therefore, so what we're saying is, in terms of if they have a boy, the bigger pogam is in being an Ammoni, because an Ammoni boy can't marry into the Jewish people, whereas an Ammoni girl could. On the other hand, when you talk about a girl, the bigger pogam is on the mitzvah side. If you said that she was an Ammonis, she'd be allowed to right away, because you're saying she's a mitzvah, and therefore she has one more generation before her descendants can join the Jewish people.
So the male and the female child will go after the father?
So that's what we're saying. The male is going to go according to the father, the female is going to go according to the mother in this case. Yeah.
It means that he has to wait till true.
So it means, in other words, that the son is not going to be able to marry a regular Bas Yisrael at all. He's going to have to marry a Gioris or a Meshachreres or what have you.
The daughter,
we're saying, is a mitzvah shame. She's also only going to be able to marry a Ger or what have you. But at least if she marries a Ger, for example, then their children will be able to freely intermarry into the Jewish people, because the daughter was a second generation mitzvah. Okay, maybe let's see if we can go a little further. The Mishnah says, Mamzerin and Asirin Asurin. Here's another group of people, two other groups of people, who are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people, Mamzerin, and Nisinim, which we're going to discuss in more detail in the Gemara. Those are the descendants of the Givonim who tricked in the times of Yeshua. They came and claimed that they were from a faraway nation and they want to make a peace treaty with the Jewish people, and they swore to make a peace treaty with them. And then when they discovered the Canaanim, then they realized we can't be over on the Shavua, even though the Shavua was made under false pretenses, and by rights we should be able to. It would make a Chilul Hashem, because Goyim are going to think that Jews are not, don't honor their Shavuos. So therefore they let them live, but they made them Choit Ve'etzim V'Shoy V'Mayim, water drawers and wood choppers for the Mishkan. So now their descendants, and we're going to discuss in the Gemara tomorrow the details of why it is that their descendants are not allowed to marry into the Jewish people.
Yeah,
They're called Givonim and they're called Nesinim. Really, Nesinim is, Givonim is the more general term, meaning everybody who descended from those Goyim and Givon. Now, not necessarily did all of them become Geirim. The ones who became Geirim and joined the Jewish people are called specifically Nesinim because Meloshon Nosan, he made, he placed them in the job of Choyt Ve'etz Meshavimai. So now, so Asurin, they are also to intermarry into the Jewish people. The Isurin, Isur Olam, Achat Tzchorim, Achat Mekevus. And again, the Isur is forever, whether boys or girls. There is actually, we're going to discuss in the Gemara tomorrow about a Gzeira that David HaMelech made on them. There is actually a discussion in Tosfos over here in our Gemara and also in Ksubas on the question, what exactly is the nature of this Isur on the Nesinim? Is it purely Dirabbanan? Or, I mean, we learned the other day, we said, we had a discussion the other day where Rava had said that when the Pasuk says, Lo Yischatin Bam, it means you're not allowed to marry any of the seven nations even after they became Gerim. So in that case, it would be an Isur Daraisa. So when we say that David Gozer Aleihem, which we'll learn tomorrow, does that mean he was Gozer on them not to marry into the Jewish people? Or does it mean that Midaraisa would have been Mutter because they're Gerim and only Dirabbanan, as we're going to see tomorrow why he said no? Or is it that even Tosfos learns that even Daraisa they're not allowed to? When we say David Gozer Aleihem, it means he was Gozer on them that forever they're Avonim. Anyway, we'll get to that point tomorrow, Rest Hashem, but let's first discuss. The Gemara says, Amr Shlokish, Mamzeres La'achar Asara Dirdus Muteres. A mamzeres would actually be mutter after 10 generations. In other words, so you have a couple had a relationship, which was also with an issukaris. They had a child with a mamzer. That child marries somebody they're mutter to, let's say gioris, goes down generation after generation. After 10 generations, then she's going to be mutter, the descendants are going to be mutter to marry into the Jewish people. Why Yalith Asiri Asiri Ammonium Mayobi? Because he learns Xavier Shava from the word Asiri by Ammonium Mayobi. By Ammonium Mayobi it says Gam Dirt Asiri. By the Mamzer it also says Gam Dirt Asiri. So therefore Ma Lahalam the Cavus Mutaris, by the Ammonium and Mayobim, the women are mutter, Afkan the Cavus Mutaris. The same thing will apply to a Mamzer. Well, the question is, E Ma Lahalam Miyad Afkan Miyad. In that case, then maybe right away, why 10 generations? The answer is Kiahani Xavier Shava Masiri Veila. Because even Resh Lakish is only going to say that Zeta Shava is only effective from the 10th generation. Because the Pasuk explicitly says 10 generations by Mamzer. So there you can't learn, you can't make a Kavachoymer, you can't make a Zeta Shava override that. Because after all, Mamzer means Mumzer, as we learned the other day. It applies equally well to both men and women. But once the Torah tells us about a Mamzer, Gam Dur Asiri, so we can say that it means that after the 10th generation, then we apply the rules of an Ammoni and Mayavi based on the Xavier Shava, and therefore we would say women are mutter. So the Gemara says, V'hanan t'nan mamzeirim v'nesinin asurin v'isurin esa oylob echad tzchor mech metavis. Our Mishnah didn't say it like that. V'shlokish is an Ammoni, you can't argue with the Mishnah. The answer is, Lekasha, Ha-Commander Omer Dun Mino Mino, Ha-Commander Omer Dun Mino V'Uki Ba'Asra. It's like this. When it comes to making a Gzeira Shava, we actually have a Machloikas Tanoyim, and actually said it's a Machloikas in a Gemara in Chulin. Let me explain. Dun Mino Mino means learn from it and continue to learn from it. Dun Mino V'Uki Ba'Asra means learn from it, but leave it in its place. It's like this. When we apply a Gzeira Shava to learn a din about one case from another one, Dun Mino Mino would mean we have the Gzeira Shava, tells us the particular din that is embodied in that word. For example, over here that the women are mutter. And then Umina would mean we continue to learn. So we would learn that you have the Gzeira Shava of the word Asiri. So we're going to learn the entire thing. We're going to say we learn all the dinim that apply to Ammonim and Mayavim apply to Mamzeim, except where they contradict the clear wording of the Pasuk. So therefore, since the Pasuk says Dirt Asiri, then fine, it means up to ten generations and they're off limits. But after that, we would say Dun Mino Mino, we learn not only the fact that it's mutter after the 10th generation, but also the fact that the women are mutter right away. We'll learn the fact that the women are mutter after the 10 generations.
The men never, right.
As opposed to if we say Dun Mino Uki Ba'Asra, means we only learn the one thing that we need to learn. So Rashi explains like this. By the Mamzer, it doesn't say Ad Olam. It just says Gam Dur Asir. By the Ammonian, it says Ad Olam. So now the Gzeira Shava is going to be as follows. That Bechlal, how do we know by a mamzer that's ad urbam? After all, the pasuk doesn't say ad urbam, it just says gamzer asuri lo yovel lebekal Hashem. Maybe in fact the 11th generation of a mamzer would be allowed to. So therefore, the Gzeira Shava tells us that no, the same way as asuri by ma'ovi means ad urbam, by ma'amoni and ma'ovi means ad urbam, the same way by a mamzer. Now, the Shlokish is going to say dun mi no mi no. So yes, we are learning that it means ad olam, but we know we're going to further learn. Just like by the ammonium and me'ovim, there comes a point when the women are mutter. In their case, it's right away. The same way here, there comes a point when the women are mutter, but after 10 generations. That would be dun mino mino. On the other hand, if we say dun mino v'uki v'asra, then it would mean we're learning the Gzeira Shava. The Tana of our Mishnah holds dun mino v'uki v'asra. Yes, we use the Gzeira Shava, and it tells us that Dered Asiri doesn't limit us to the 10th generation. It means ad olam. But don't then also go and learn the fact that the women are mutter. That already is not included in the Gzeira Shava.
So they would be mutter.
So according to the Tana of our Mishnah, they wouldn't be mutter. They would be also, they'd be also forever. The Shlokish, who holds that after 10 generations mutter, he's following the opinion of Dun Mino Mina, that he says that you can not only learn from the Gzeira Shava the one detail that you set out to learn, namely that Dur Asiri doesn't just mean the 10th generation, it means Ad Olam, you can also learn the next point, which is that just like over there the women are eventually mutter, so also over here.
One will still hold the women are mutter.
So that's the thing. Rish Lakish uses that to say that the women are mutter. That is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer about how Gzeira Shava works. We have to realize that with every one of the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and Adreshes for him, each of those is almost like a family of rules. You have rules within those rules. You know, we say it every day in Davin, we rattle it off. We don't realize. Kavach Chomer has rules within it. Gzeira Shava has rules within it. And so forth. And here we have an example of one of the rules within Gzeira Shava, namely, how do we apply the Gzeira Shava? Do we apply it? Is it like an open pipeline? We're taking over everything we can from the one to the other. Or are we learning only the one particular detail that we set out to learn with the Gzeira Shava? And then that's it. We close off the pipeline and we don't learn anything else. So the Tana of our Mishnah is saying like that, is saying we learn the one detail, that Dered Asiri doesn't just mean Dered Asiri, it means Ad Olam, just like it says by Amon and Noyav, but to learn any more details, such as that women are mutter, that now is closed off. Whereas Rish Lakish holds like Rabbi Eliezer, who says, dun mi no mi no, we can learn not only the ad olam, but also the fact that women are eventually going to be mutter. So the Gemara says, Shalos Rabbi Eliezer, mamzeres va'achar asara dori mahu. What would be the din, they asked Rabbi Eliezer, of mamzeres after 10 generations? Given that Rabbi Eliezer himself holds dun mino mino, like Rish Lakish says, so what do he say? It's mutter. So instead, he kind of evaded the question. Amalami tells them, mi yitim li dur shlishi ba'atahareni. If only somebody would give me a third generation of mamzerim, I would declare them tahor. Which means, Tosfos says, Rabbi Eliezer in general, we have the Gemara mentions in various places, Rabbi Eliezer never wanted to say something that he didn't explicitly hear from his Rebbeim. So even though he held this way, he didn't want to explicitly say that. So he didn't explicitly hear from his Rebbeim that it should be mutter. So he's kind of evading the question and saying, listen, mamzerim, as it is, you're not going to get to the third generation anyway. So al makasav mamzer loy chai, which means that he holds that a mamzer is not going to be able to live. So there's never going to be a third generation.
So why is that?
Because it's actually brought in the Mefarshim from a Medrash that the Nevi'im daven that it should be that way, because otherwise Mamzerim are going to be mixed up into the Jewish people and you're not going to know. You're going to end up where everybody's going to end up being totally caught.
Yeah, happens if they just die off.
So therefore the Eibishter arranges that they die young. So the Gemara says, V'hanan t'nan mamzerim asurim v'isurin isur olam. We said the isur is forever, implying that they're going to be able to live and have children. It's like this, the idea of mamzer who's known, chaya, he can live, because people will know to stay away from him and not intermarry with him. The lo yedia, when you have a mamzer where nobody knows whether he's a mamzer or not, lo chaya, then he won't live. The Eibishter arranges him for him to die young, so that's the idea, you don't have a problem. The idea of a lo yedia, if they sort of know, but they don't really know, So then, ad tlosa dori chaye, trele chaye, then it'll only be up to 3 generations, because people will be able to keep track of the 3 generations. After that, they're likely to lose track, so therefore the Eibishter to make sure that the descendants of them won't last past 3 generations. So that's why Rabbi Eliezer is saying the 3rd generation. And the Gemara says, "Ahu dehavi b'shiva vusei de Rav Ami." There was a mamzer in Rav Ami's neighborhood. Afni zalei de mamzer dehava. Rav Ami made a public announcement that the guy's a mamzer. Bochi ba'ozel. So the poor guy was crying and going along. What'd you do to my shiva prospect? Omalei. So Rav Ami tells him, "Don't worry, chayim masati loch. On the contrary, I'm giving you life. Otherwise, you would be a mamzer who's unknown and you would die young. Like this, at least you have a chance to live long. You'll have to marry a mamzer. You'll have to marry a geyer. It's fine, but at least you have a chance to live. Where otherwise, what?" So you can marry a shifcha k'nei, you can marry a shifcha m'shukher, as we said on Oman Aleph, you could even marry a shifcha and then free his children, and his children will be, and his children will be kosher to Yidden. Yeah, that works out. Right. Which, about the shifcha?
Right.
Could be we came across it in Sanhedrin. The main place it talks about it is in Kiddushin.
Oh, Kiddushin. Yeah. That's right. There's someone else.
Okay. All right.